Good morning. Welcome to National Public Radio. Today, we present a new program, which we are sure you will all like. Bums on Film.
Hello, everybody, and welcome again to F This Movie. My name is Patrick Brownlee. I am joined tonight by JB.
And I'm so glad that I finally get a chance to finish Gun Town Marshall. Chapter 8, Battle at Dawn. Two things took Catsfoot by surprise. Okay, I'm joking.
I haven't been able to sleep for weeks wondering how that thing would resolve. I lost my library card.
Since the Western podcast, I have gotten a lot of specific feedback. And most of the feedback focused on, what the fuck were you thinking with the book thing? So I'm joking. Not only will I never read a book on the podcast anymore, I will never, ever again read a book.
I think you're making the right call.
That gives me more time for movies.
We are doing an experimental show this year. It's all going to be backwards. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Sometimes my arms bend back.
That gum you like will come back into style.
You know, in the past, we've done shows, summer wrap-ups. We've done year wrap-ups. Now we're just starting to do yearly check-ins. Hey, it's been 3 months. Let's talk about what's happened. So we're going to talk about some of our favorite movies of 2012 thus far, as we launch headlong into the summer movie season, and preview some of what is still to come this year.
Also, there's another part of this podcast that's experimental. I have a car battery attached to Patrick's balls.
Correct.
We'll see how that plays out.
Did you say experimental or sexy?
I find those two words to be synonymous. Sexily synonymous. You need to tell everyone the rigmarole.
Please don't zap my balls.
Rigmarole. Cue.
You can visit our website at fthismovie.blogspot.com. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/fthismovie. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/fthismovie. Find us in the iTunes store. But remember, to find all of our past episodes, you have to visit fthismovie.blogspot.com. And, of course, email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. The email has been a little light lately. Not a lot of emails coming in. So drop us a line. Tell us what you think. Give us suggestions for future shows.
Where won't we?
J-Bones, before we talk about our favorite movies of the year so far, what have you seen lately?
Well, I'll tell you, although the subject has been exhaustively covered on this very podcast.
Exhaustively is right.
And I drove and drove and drove from Muncie as fast as my little Fred Flintstone feet would go. But I didn't make it back in time. So I did see The Avengers.
Yes.
And I think I would place myself somewhere between you and Doug.
Okay.
So that when we start that sexy sandwich thing, I'll be in the middle.
Nice.
And I liked it. I really liked it. It's marvelously entertaining. Any criticism I would have would be nitpickery.
Right.
And what I thought was, I know Doug said he thought the first 45 minutes was boring. I wouldn't say that, but the beginning of it, maybe the first hour, reminded me of a video game that my son used to play called Capcom versus Marvel.
Okay.
And it was one of those fighting video games like Mortal Kombat.
Yeah.
And I think on the podcast you have designated this as fan service.
Okay.
I wondered why every possible matchup had to fight.
Right.
Until we got to where they're fighting against the enemy.
Yeah, I mean, part of that is definitely that the comic books have a long tradition of having superheroes battle one another. But yeah, definitely it's a lot of fan service because it's like, well, who would win in a fight, Iron Man or Thor? Well, here you go, everyone.
As soon as they start to fight, I check out because A, it looks like a video game, and B, I would suggest there's something at work here that I'd like to call Van Helsing syndrome, where when it becomes CGI fighting among invulnerable characters, what does it matter other than they get slammed up against things.
Right.
Because they pop back up.
Well, and even if they're not necessarily invulnerable, there aren't really any stakes because those are your heroes. Whoever wins, it's not like, hey, I'm thrilled that this guy won, because technically you should be on the side of both of them.
And I thought it was interesting, Doug brought this up, that the producer of the Avengers said that they wanted to go Transformers 3 big.
Boo.
Because I actually saw Transformers 3, some street toughs, some thugs, kidnap me, duct tape me to a seat at the patio theater. And
wait, but paid your admission, which I thought was...
That was nice. Small popcorn, though. Not large. And like Alex in A Clockwork Orange, they rested my eyelids open with metal things, and they forced me to watch Transformers 3. And so I've seen it. And at the end, there's these Transformers that are like huge mechanical snakes breaking through buildings.
Yes.
And at the end of the Avengers, those biomechanical whatever the hell they were.
Sperm.
Look to me exactly like.
Yeah. Yeah, very similar.
So there's this weird thing in Hollywood where once something is a thing, it's copied. The most obvious example is after Cloverfield, we got a whole bunch of other movie monsters that looked like Cloverfield. But I thought it was so close. It was featured in the trailer pretty extensively. But I thought that was odd.
Well, look at Battleship coming out. I mean, if you change the name of Battleship, you could tell me that that was Transformers 4. Everything down to the color timing, the cinematography, and of course the studio isn't necessarily hiding it, because in giant letters in the trailer it says, from Hasbro, the studio that brought you Transformers.
And
this is a good thing.
We'll talk about this more later, but Battleship is yet another attempt to destroy my childhood, because I hesitate to call it a board game, but the original game of Battleship was an essential part of my youth. And you would go to the basement with your friend, and you would lie on your belly face-to-face and play Battleship for hours on end. And the basement wasn't heated, and the floor was cold concrete. And when you were done, you would get up. You were like 8, and you would have the worst backache of your young life. And I used to call that the Battleship backache, because that was the only thing that called it. That caused it, rather. And I have great memories of the Battleship backache. I have a feeling that this new film might give me the Battleship headache.
Zing!
But one more thing about the Avengers, which I thought was interesting, and again, this was my wife's comment. You had said on the podcast that the bad guys from space are so generic and so colorless. It's very much like a video game where we just got to pick these guys off, either with our enormous strength or our guns. And that my wife had suggested, what an odd thing to send them down in what amounts to a jet ski. that was the choice that they made.
Yeah.
And she said, for the aliens, this is D-Day. And she said, imagine the American forces in World War II sending the soldiers in on jet skis, which I thought was really funny. The dialogue in The Avengers is great.
Yeah.
I thought Mark Ruffalo stole the film.
Yeah.
It was so nice that after 2 non-starts, they finally figured out how to do the Hulk.
Yeah.
You play it like the Wolfman. That's the trope. That's what you want to do.
Yeah. Did you happen to read, I think film critic Hulk maybe wrote some stuff, possibly for the New York Times, about why this version of the Hulk is the best. And it talks about empathy and a lot about Bill Bixby. But, you know, one of the things that people have been talking about that makes this version better is that it's not entirely defined by his desire to not want to turn into the Hulk, which is what the first two films are all about. And that's right at odds with what we want in the audience. We want him to turn into the Hulk because we want the special effects, we want him to smash stuff, we want destruction, you know, we want that to be unleashed. And the whole movie he spent trying not to turn into the Hulk. So then when he does, we're supposed to be upset, but really we're happy and it makes no sense. And this movie kind of understands that, yes, there's some catharsis to him turning into the Hulk. We can be excited about it.
But interestingly enough, ever since the Eric Bana Hulk...
Yes.
I'm not interested in him turning into the Hulk.
Okay.
Maybe this makes me different. because the Hulk as a CGI creation is very uninteresting to me, so I'm much more interested in the human drama. Mm-hmm. So A, Ruffalo was much better with the human drama,
yeah.
And B, I thought the Avengers CGI Hulk was much better.
Definitely.
It was done better,
right?
For a number of reasons, than any previous Hulk. But it was nice to see that they got that right. One quibble. Dana Stevens, who writes for Slate, and I love her criticism. I've talked about her endlessly. In her review, she said, Ruffalo gets the best line in the film,
mm-hmm.
and then does not tell us what it is. So I literally sat there through the film trying to figure out what it was, and in fact, that's why I emailed you.
Oh, okay.
What did he say? Because I thought that was the line, which
Yeah, she's referring to...
But in your podcast, you suggested...
Yeah, without spoiling it. There's a line that I think is pretty obviously right. The best line. A lot of people have probably seen it by now, but I still don't want to spoil it.
Yeah, no problem. And I thought what Joss Whedon brought to the party was the dialogue is really sharp.
It is. Which is nice and for this not, kind of a...
We're not used to that.
No, not at all.
And again, I'm an old fuddy-duddy, and I'm not the target market for this film, but I know the comic book movies that I really like are the comic book movies that sort of find a common humanity, and there's a poetic moment in my favorite comic book movies where the filmmakers subtly whisper, maybe this isn't about people in capes. Maybe this is about all of us as human beings. So in the first X-Men movie, after the big bar fight, Wolverine is driving with Rogue, and there's a moment of quiet, and Rogue says, does it hurt when they come out? And Wolverine says, every time. And suddenly, we're not in comic book land anymore. Mm-hmm. We're in a very different sort of existential place. And in the second Spider-Man,
mm-hmm.
Doc Ock's I Will Not Die a Monster mm-hmm. has so much resonance. And I found the line in this, this might be a spoiler.
That's okay. If you haven't seen The Avengers, he's about to give away a line of dialogue.
Well, now I feel
that's
like something
right.
The cat just dragged in.
No, it's fine.
That at one point Bruce Banner says that he tried to put a bullet in his head and the other guy spit it out.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly you're in this sort of existential dilemma of, oh boy. I knew this guy had it bad, but that's sort of incredible. So I think The Avengers speaks to getting more movies that can not only appeal to teenagers, because let me tell you, the day, the next Monday after the opening weekend of The Avengers, my entire film study class, all they wanted to do was talk about The Avengers.
Yeah.
And the two students who hadn't seen it felt left out. And I said I thought all of you saw it because I thought everyone in the Northern Hemisphere saw
right,
it
right.
because it made money. But it led to an interesting theory. There are some people who don't go to the movies very much. And the audience for The Avengers the first weekend was so massive and the word of mouth is so great, I think it's going to pull the people who don't usually go to movies to see it the second weekend. So I'm wondering if The Avengers is going to sink Dark Shadows.
Quite possibly.
Plus, there's a lot of people who want to see it again.
Yeah, I would love to see it again.
Yeah.
Again, because the stuff that's great is so great that you want to revisit it. Now, you can speak to something that Doug and I were not able to speak to. You saw the movie in 3D.
Yes, for reasons that had nothing to do with liking 3D.
Right.
I thought the 3D was excellent.
Okay.
I thought it was very well done. It might have something to do with the lateness of the screening I attended or with my old tired eyes. But about halfway through, I either stopped seeing the 3D or I was so involved in the story that it didn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
It was like I suffered from eye fatigue or something. I don't remember anything really incredible in terms of 3D in the second half. A lot of really interesting effects in the first half.
Okay. There was one shot, and I don't remember what it was. There was one shot in particular that felt out of place in 2D that I felt, oh, they did that for 3D, but I don't remember what it was. Somebody pointing something directly at the camera. I believe they were doing a yo-yo right at the camera.
Well, when that,
so
one,
that,
guy,
was weird
when that one guy came out with the two paddle balls, yeah, right. I thought, what does this have to do with the Avenger?
Loki, this is a terrible plan. I don't know. Do you think that the insane amount of success that The Avengers enjoyed on its opening weekend will sort of hurt the rest of the summer, or like Dark Knight Rises comes out in a couple of weeks. And do you think that the movie will get sort of a boost because everyone's all fired up on comic book movies or on summer movies? When the summer opens this big, does it get people wanting to go out to the movies more, or does it kind of fatigue set in almost immediately? I saw my movie for the summer.
No, I think a rising tide raises all boats. But I think what was the summer where we had way too many comic book movies, and it was all of them. When Thor came out.
That was last summer, and Captain America, and Green Lantern, and X-Men First Class.
And we saw Thor because it was first.
Yes.
And we liked it.
Yes.
Because it was first.
Exactly.
And then we saw Captain America and said, you know, I don't think Thor was that great. And then we saw Green Lantern and threw up a little bit into our mouths that if it wasn't Batman, and if it wasn't the third Batman after The Dark Knight, I think any other comic book movie this summer.
Well, I think that's sort of some of what's happening to Amazing Spider-Man, which
is
a movie that's coming out that no one is really talking about or caring that much about.
Because even people who aren't into it like we are saying,
why are we doing this again?
It seems, well, the old standby, too soon.
Right. And seeing the trailers for Amazing Spider-Man, and there are a few things in the trailers that I like as a big, big Spider-Man fan, but it seems to be that Sony, the people behind the movie at Sony, decided the reason to redo Spider-Man now was that not enough of the scenes were shot at night. Because the entire new movie appears to take place at around 11 p.m.
Is it a subtle marketing push for Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark? I saw the trailer for The Amazing Spider-Man.
Yes.
And one of the, I don't know if I call this a bonus, let's put quotation marks around bonus, of going to see something in 3D is you get a whole bunch of 3D trailers. And the 3D trailer for Spider-Man was kind of cool.
Yeah.
I mean,
well, that movie, I believe, was actually shot in 3D, not post-converted the way The Avengers was.
Lots of eye candy.
Yeah. It seemed a lot of, like, point-of-view shots of, like, hands shooting webs and swinging through the city. So maybe that's worth seeing in 3D. I just can't stand 3D. I don't know.
No, I don't blame you.
Yeah.
As I explained to you before, all of the 2D screenings in Muncie, Indiana, were sold out. And yet, there were plenty of seats available for the 3D show.
It bums me out because, you know, we have a theater near us that has an IMAX screen, and I would love to see The Avengers in IMAX, but it's only in 3D, and I wish they could get a 2D IMAX screening. Just one a day, maybe. I would make it a point to go.
Does anyone realize, and I'm not prescient or prophetic or psychic, that like the 3D craze of the 50s, in 30 years, we will look back at this as the 3D craze of the 2000s.
And it was all Avatar. I mean, all of this came because one movie made the most money. And
Avatar,
someone decided, oh, it was because of the 3D.
Except for the surcharge, Avatar would have been
crazy, crazy. So let's talk about our favorite movies of the year thus far. Again, it's only May.
And I'm at a disadvantage because as I will shout to anyone on the street, I will bother strangers with this information. I saw way too many movies last year. So I've been trying to cool it. But I made a list of what I've seen so far this year.
Yeah.
And I'm not too far behind last year.
Oh, well, that's good. Because I think I am. As I looked at what had come out, there was a lot of stuff that I missed, including a few things I maybe would have liked to have seen. So I actually think I've seen fewer movies this year, at least in a theater.
And so I sat down with my little pen, because I'm analog, and I made a list of what I've seen so far this year. And it seems to me that you can break this year up, so far, into movies that were good, not great, and utter failures.
Oh, okay.
And very few movies, I thought, were pick the adjective that says at the time you think it's a masterpiece. So the year starts with Haywire.
Yes.
Which I thought was good.
Yes.
I thought it was very entertaining. I didn't think it was great. In retrospect, I liked it a lot more when I saw it than I do now looking back.
Sure.
Sort of in retrospect. It's sort of slight.
Yeah.
But it's not trying to be anything except a fine action movie entertainment. It doesn't have delusions of grandeur.
No, not at all. Not at all. I mean, I do think that Steven Soderbergh knew exactly what he was making. I think some of the movie's failure, if you're going to say it's a failure, comes from inflated expectations, which we are certainly guilty of because we were calling it, we were saying it was going to be the best movie ever made.
Right, and that this was the year of Haywire.
Yeah.
And in the middle of the night, I don't know if I ever told you this, it would be 3 or 4 in the morning, my phone would ring, and I was in a fog, I was sound asleep, and I would pick up the phone, and Doug would be on the other side, and he would shout, Haywire, and hang up, for months, and sometimes he would whisper it seductively. It was the strangest thing. You guys were over the moon, but it couldn't have been just you.
Right.
A lot of people had these expectations.
Well, and I think maybe that Gina Carano carries a fan base with her of people who are into sort of ultimate fighting who went to see the movie and were disappointed at what they felt was a lack of action in the movie.
Which is insane.
I guess.
What do you need?
The Raid. I think.
Oh,
I think
okay.
They wanted The Raid. And no movie can be The Raid. Except for The Raid.
And for whatever reason, the website that was supposed to tell me every movie that's been released this year
yes.
didn't have that one. So that is not on my list.
Okay.
But that was great.
Yeah.
That was terrific. That was really something.
That movie's crazy.
And you should read Patrick's review because it's on fthismovie.com.
I had Haywire. I had an underrated category because while I agree with you, I don't think Haywire is great. I also think it was better than the response that it got. There are only two movies in my underrated category. One is Haywire. The other is John Carter.
And I must have visited the shittiest website ever because it wasn't until you mentioned John Carter on the Sunday podcast, so to speak, that I remember that at Patrick's insistence, I did visit John Carter and could not for the life of me understand why people hated it so much, why there was a backlash, why
people were
months before
people
it came,
were excited to hate that movie.
Right.
They relished its failure.
Is this another example where people are reviewing the budget instead of the film?
Definitely part of it. They were excited that somebody, I think, affiliated with Pixar had blown it. They felt like it was too expensive. It's confusing. Who's going to go see a movie called John Carter? And the movie makes a lot of mistakes, including in the marketing and in the title. The comedian Kumail Nanjiani has a great line about the title John Carter. He says, it's like calling Transformers Sam Witwicky, which I thought was very funny.
And on the screen at the end of the film is what they should have called the damn thing.
And were calling it for a long time.
Because John Carter of Mars is a terrific title.
Right.
Because I look at that and I go, well, wait. So this guy's from Mars? It sort of sets up the whole thing. I was fantastically entertained by it. I thought it was a rousing boys' adventure story. I thought it was well done. It's not a perfect film.
No.
But my God.
Yeah, it has its problems, but I was really entertained by it. And again, perhaps wanted to defend it also, because I feel like I don't understand what the hate is with this movie. And Eric Asperschlager from our site wrote a review of it, which you can find at fthismovie.blogspot.com, and wasn't crazy about the movie, but really, you know, reviewed the movie on its own terms, just said, well, it didn't really work for me, and I wanted it to, but it didn't. Which isn't the same as, I'm so happy that this failed. Nikki Fink at Deadline Hollywood was writing practically daily updates about how badly that movie was doing and really enjoying it.
Sort of dancing on its grave.
Yeah.
And maybe, because I went in with such low expectations, that set me up to say, well, this is kind of wonderful.
Yeah.
And I don't like to review a movie based on the following basis, but the lead actress in that film.
Yes, Lynn Collins.
Is one of the most attractive women I have ever seen in my life.
Very
pretty. It was like distractingly beautiful.
Very pretty.
I mean, this is getting in the way of the story they're trying to tell because I'm just staring at her and wondering how a human being can look like that.
She was in X-Men Origins Wolverine as well.
I cleverly skipped that.
No, you did not. You saw that movie with me. we sort of argued about the movie afterwards.
Because, at the end, is there two Wolverines fighting?
Not really. I mean, it's Wolverine and Sabretooth. They're not really fighting. It's such a horrible movie.
This is a mark of the film. You're telling me I saw it.
Yes, and accused me of being too hard on it. Because I thought it was so terrible. And
you were right.
It's unbelievably bad.
How many years ago was that? I apologize. My
God. It came out in a summer where not a ton of comic book movies came out. It had to be 2009, maybe? Summer
2009? I thought I skipped it.
No, you saw it.
Lynn Collins in John Carter.
Yes.
Did they digitally manipulate her eyes in some way?
Perhaps, but I don't think so. Like the color or the shape?
The color.
Yeah, maybe. Or she wore contacts. They could do that.
Because that was beguiling. And I saw The Gray.
Okay. I have not seen The Gray.
Which was so much better than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
It is a good story, well told. Some really interesting directorial choices. Some amazing cinematography. Although it's part of, I think, what is one of Seth Meyers' best jokes on SNL this season. Behind him, they put up the poster for The Gray, and Seth Meyers suggested from now on, every Liam Neeson movie is going to be called I'm Coming to Kill You.
That movie had, I mean, it was a successful movie, and a lot of people went out because Liam Neeson is like a fully-fledged movie star now, especially like an action star. So a lot of people went out opening weekend, and I think a lot of critics were surprised at how much they liked it and how much it wasn't the movie they thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of audiences felt the opposite, that they were unhappy with the fact that it wasn't the movie they thought it was going to be. They thought it was going to be Liam Neeson, Wolf Puncher, and it wasn't.
You have to watch what you say, because I can easily imagine in a couple summers a movie called Wolf Puncher. We're copywriting that right now, folks. It was done with taste and intelligence,
yeah,
which speaks to something that some audiences don't want, but I was really pleasantly surprised by The Gray. Now, have you seen Woman in Black yet?
No, I have not.
And I may be way off on this.
Okay.
But it's really, really good.
Yeah.
They've revived Hammer Studios, and
which they've been trying to do for even Let Me In was a Hammer movie.
That was sort of in name only,
sure,
sort of thing, but sure. I may be wrong. I went with very low expectations for Woman in Black, and it's very good. It's very old school. It's very atmospheric. There's a lot of good jumps. There's a lot of good scares. It's got an ending that people can argue about, and actually succeeds at something that I think most horror films don't. There is violence against children. And I think in a lot of ways the film earns the right to play with that trope, because mm-hmm. usually I think you should keep kids out of it.
Right.
But I'm really dying for you to see it.
Yeah.
Whenever that might be.
I think because you saw it a few weeks into its run, correct?
Not too many, maybe a week.
I think by the time I had heard that I should see it, it was too late. You know what I mean? So that I'm kind of waiting for DVD.
And I'm also afraid of that, because I think part of the experience was...
No doubt.
Yeah.
My favorite movie of the year so far, also a horror movie, also a ghost story, and that is The Innkeepers, written and directed by Ty West, which just came out on DVD and Blu-ray, and I want to recommend it to everyone, but it's not going to be the same at home as it was in a theater, which I'm sure, you know, is the same case with The Woman in Black.
And I remember you recommending Innkeepers when it was still at the Music Box. I thought Wanderlust was very disappointing. I thought Friends with Kids was a mess. Hunger Games?
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
Not great.
No.
But again, it's been a long time since I've bought books from Scholastic, which kind of seems to be part of that market. American Reunion, you guys did a podcast.
Garbage.
I think I liked it less. If only because I'm a big Eugene Levy fan.
Yeah.
But I think Doug might have pointed this out. What has he done? What has he done with his career? He used to be really funny.
Yeah, and again, given the right material, still can be, because when he shows up in the Christopher Guest movies, he's funny. But in terms of movies, I mean, except for the Christopher Guest stuff,
No, when you're has he ever at something been funny? Like Armed and Dangerous, which right. is awful. I'm going back to SCTV, yeah, where right. he was just
absolutely
brilliantly funny.
Yeah.
Three Stooges, which I thought was a crime against humanity. You didn't have as big of a problem with it as I did.
No.
Just because it was inoffensive in its awfulness?
No, because in a lot of ways it was offensive in its awfulness. I don't know. I was weirdly indifferent towards it. It's not good at all, but maybe because it was just so disposable that I forgot it almost immediately.
True.
And I believe it came out the same weekend as Cabin in the Woods, and that was the movie that I was stuck on.
And I'm still stuck on Cabin in the Woods. I'm afraid that I'm overpraising it to such an extent that people are going to start to slap me. In fact, if it weren't for Cabin in the Woods, I would think The Woman in Black was even better.
Sure.
Cabin in the Woods put Woman in Black in perspective for me. Because certainly what Cabin in the Woods is trying to do is so much more ambitious. But I give Woman in Black a lot of credit.
Well, because I thought about this with The Innkeepers, because I think Cabin in the Woods is probably a better movie. It's certainly more ambitious. It's trying to say more. It's trying to do more. But I would almost say if I had to pick one as a favorite so far, I would say The Innkeepers. And I think that has to do with, do you want to see this thing that's about the thing, or do you want to see this thing that is the thing? And sometimes you want to see the thing that is the thing.
And I talked to someone who saw The Cabin in the Woods because of my recommendation and hated the first half,
okay,
which is the fake thing.
Right.
But the minute it switched, they were into it, and they thought, well, that's the horror movie.
Sure.
And why did I have to sit through this sort of obvious first hour?
Yeah.
But I think the conclusion we should draw, and as everyone knows, I'm just this rabid horror fan in that I actually have rabies. This is a terrific year for horror films.
Yeah.
And we have sat through so much unredeemed shit that any year that can present us in the first 4 months with Woman in Black, The Innkeepers, and A Cabin in the Woods, oh my God, this should be a cause for celebration.
Yeah.
So here's my question. Did Woman in Black make a lot of money?
I think it did okay. They are planning on sequelizing it.
You're kidding.
I swear.
Okay, I'm not going to give this away.
Okay.
But I don't see how.
Right.
It would be like a sequel to Hamlet.
Okay.
Cabin in the Woods, did it make money?
I don't know. It did okay, but, you know, because it was caught up in 3 years worth of nonsense,
yeah.
I don't even know what the budget is on it anymore, you know? But, I mean, it didn't do horribly, but it didn't do great.
I want horror films to make a lot of money so that they
As
make
do I,
more of them.
And they don't.
And my final comment about this year so far is that with each succeeding week, with each succeeding slog to the multiplex,
mm-hmm.
Casa de mi Padre continues to rise in my estimation.
Okay.
And I give it so much credit for just unapologetically being what it is.
I need to see it. It seems like neither of us saw the other's picks. My the only comedy I had on my list, because it's been, again, it's early in the year. We're only in the fifth month, so I can't say it's been a bad year for comedy, but I haven't seen a ton of comedies that I really liked. Like you said, Wanderlust, which should have been a pretty great comedy, wasn't. The Three Stooges is very much not a good comedy. But my favorite comedy so far is 21 Jump Street, which, like you said, as I see more stuff, I think more and more highly of. And now sort of excited about seeing Magic Mike, not only because it's the new Steven Soderbergh movie, but because I have such tremendous yeah. affection for Channing Tatum based on 21 Jump Street that now I'm willing to go see him in anything.
And 21 Jump Street is next on my list. God knows there's nothing coming out next weekend that we have any desire to see. It's next on my list because of your recommendation.
Yeah. Do you think, you know, the older I get, not the older I get, the more I look at my 10 best lists at the end of the years, the more they appear to be skewing into genre stuff. Like when I look at my top 10 list of last year, it's almost all genre movies.
Yeah.
Now, is that just me becoming more and more niche and specific in what I like, or is that the proliferation of genre movies in the mainstream? Because here we are talking about some of our favorite movies, again, only in the first few months, and our three favorite movies are all horror movies, which I think would lead people to the conclusion that, well, you guys like horror movies, and that's why these are your picks.
Well, part of it is that, because we're clearly on the hunt for those. But I would argue that more mainstream films, Oscar-worthy fare, have just become so tapioca and so devoid of any sort of mark or uniqueness or distinguishing feature.
I actually think, and you know, I think last year made the case that the first few months of the year are the wasteland, you know, where they just dump out anything.
Yeah, it's a garbage dump.
But I'm starting to believe that these are the most interesting months of the year, because from here on out, you basically know what you're getting from week to week. That doesn't mean you're not going to get a good movie. The summer months,
we know what
you
the
get
summer
one
is,
kind of movie.
And as you've pointed out, every year, summer creeps back.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, now it's, you know,
wow,
sort
May,
of...
May 4th.
Even Hunger Games had sort of a summer-style push, and that was March.
I teach high school, folks. I still have 5 weeks to go. The summer cannot, for the sake of my student sanity, the summer cannot begin on May 4th.
So summer ends, and then you get another month of garbage.
Yes.
And then it switches over to...
awards-worthy stuff.
And you know what all those movies are. You know those beats. You know that Judi Dench is probably going to be in three of them. And those are sort of on autopilot in the way that you were just saying, that all of these sort of awards-caliber movies are all sort of homogenized and the same. So... maybe it's like January through April where anything goes.
Things can escape.
Right.
Because the Judi Dench phenomenon, I think it opens in a week or two, the Immaculate Hotel Marigold.
The best exotic Marigold Hotel. And there's not one word in that title that has me interested.
And I have tremendous affection for every actor in the film. But you see the trailer and you're like, okay, I can see where this is going.
See it at 1 p.m., everyone. You could still have dinner by 4.
And I'm not sure about this. At this point, the podcast schizophrenically changes to Patrick and JB looking forward to the shitstorm to come. So I'm looking at this list, which I'm now imagining is just as incomplete as the original list I saw.
Perhaps.
And I noticed a couple things.
Okay.
Adam Sandler continues to make movies that look like the fake movies
on
the posters, on the wall, in Funny People.
And you can depend on like two a year now. He's got one in the summer and one in the around the holidays.
So we have That's My Boy.
Yes.
Which, just based on the poster, looks like it's so... adjectives escape me.
Have you seen the trailer?
No.
Oh, there's a trailer for it. Which is not funny, as you can imagine, but again, speaks to this weird thing where Adam Sandler is uncomfortable just playing a person. So every character he plays has to have this weird affect, funny voice. So he's playing this ridiculous caricature of a person, not just a person.
Two of the most odd and... okay, my adjectives are failing me. It seems as though Adam Sandler's time at SNL was very much, in some ways, like Adam Sandler's time on SNL. And they're together for the first time. Because someone decided that Adam Sandler could pass himself off as...
well, I believe they addressed that in the movie. That, like, he was 10 or something when he impregnated Sandberg's mom.
I was just going for that there's a slight resemblance.
Sure.
Right? But... That's My Boy pales in comparison. I have not seen a poster.
Okay.
I've not seen a trailer. I've only seen the title. And I don't know if you're aware of what his fall movie is. Do you know?
No.
Just by the title, we can tell what it's going to be.
Okay.
Hotel Transylvania.
Oh.
And it's live action.
Really? Well, I thought that was an animated movie for some reason.
Be afraid.
Oh, well, that's going to take a bigger shit on the characters you love than Van Helsing.
Although we should check, because maybe it is animated.
It doesn't matter. He's involved. Last time he was involved with an animated movie, it was Eight Crazy Nights. The movie about reindeer pooping.
So, next weekend, Dark Shadows opens, and I've already written a column about that. It was a really important part of my childhood, and now they're going to make a mockery of it. But looking at other movies that are coming out this year, so we have a new trend, a series of films that attempt to destroy JB's childhood. And in the spirit of the completely unnecessary Fright Night remake.
Yes.
Total Recall.
Oh my gosh.
What is wrong with the original?
And it's not that old. I guess it's 20 years old, right?
But it's in color, and it's fairly well done, and what the hell? And then, later in the summer, Red Dawn!
Yeah, well, and that, by the way, that's another movie that's been, same with Cabin in the Woods, and Chris Hemsworth is in both of them. Got caught up in this MGM collapse. That movie's been sitting on the shelf for years.
It doesn't bode well.
Red Dawn is so specific to the 1980s. I don't know how you could redo it. Its messages are so specific.
Red Dawn is so specific to John Milius.
Yeah,
his unique worldview.
Right.
Although I will say this, back before CDs, we used to make mix tapes. We used to make party tapes on a cassette.
Oh, yeah.
And in college, I used to make party tapes where the songs were introduced by little snippets of dialogue from movies, because I was that guy. And I used to use so many sound bites from Red Dawn.
Just people yelling Wolverines.
My favorite was Harry Dean Stanton's monologue about how he raised them. Now you see why I raised you this way. Where they're talking to him through the fence.
Yeah, yeah.
Where's my father, Mr. Eckert? Son, I don't know. I don't know. And it ends with Harry Dean Stanton screaming, "Avenge me! Avenge me!" And wouldn't you know, Harry Dean shows up in the Avengers.
He sure does.
Another reason to like that.
And he has a great line. Well, son, you got a condition.
That got a tremendous laugh.
Of course, it's hilarious.
The Dictator is coming out.
Yeesh.
And could we suggest that this is the law of diminishing returns?
Yeah.
Because I was a fan of Borat.
Yes.
I've since revisited it. It doesn't hold up as well.
Right.
I was not a fan of Bruno.
No.
And this seems to be more of the same. I used to have so much respect for his ability to commit to the bit. But even the way he's marketing this, appearing on Howard Stern and SNL and The Daily Show in character,
mm-hmm.
I don't know.
It's one of these things where I don't even see how it could be funny. It's not that, like, hey, they're not showing us any of the funny parts. It's that I don't even know if the potential for humor is there. And to see him go on Saturday Night Live and just do these hacky jokes is so dispiriting. Because, again, I thought he was super talented and funny at one point. And it doesn't look good.
Have you seen the trailer for Seeking a Friend for the End of the World?
I have. I'm excited about that movie.
And I am, too.
Yeah.
And it's got a...
But again, it goes one of two ways.
It's got a whole bunch of things going against it.
Yeah.
Two of them being Steve and Carell. But in the trailer, I don't think I'm spoiling anything. This is in the trailer. It is suggested that when everyone finds out they're all going to die, people react in very different ways, mm-hmm. which I think is a really cool premise.
Yeah.
And unless I'm misinterpreting it, there's a bunch of stoner teens who decide to keep a TGI Fridays open and serve people food.
I don't even know about the stoner teens, but obviously the Fridays is still open. Yeah, I don't know.
And that scene made me want to see the movie.
There's a lot of stuff.
I'll go see a movie about that.
Patton Oswalt has a funny little bit in the trailer. The thing with the cop refusing to let them go, let them off of the ticket is funny. Again, the movie could be very disappointing, but right now it has potential.
I'm looking forward to it, and looking at everything that's being released for the rest of the year, I'm not looking forward to much. Obviously, I have to go see Prometheus, because it's a big deal.
Are you not excited about Prometheus?
Not at all.
Really? See, I am. I'm intrigued, at the very least. I'm not interested in a prequel to Alien at all.
And that's where I have a problem, because Alien is a masterpiece, and Aliens is one of the greatest action movies ever made. And then we get a series of disappointing Alien sequels. So what makes us think that a prequel, because it's Ridley Scott?
Yes. Yes. And prequels are never a good idea.
And the ever. And visually, there's things in the trailer that are interesting.
Yes.
And yet, I think it somewhat suffers from Star Wars prequel syndrome, where if this happened before Alien, why does the technology seem to be so much more advanced
right.
than in Alien?
There are things in the trailer that, to me, suggest that it feels a lot like Event Horizon, or like the last third of Sunshine. There's a specific kind of science fiction movie that I'm not crazy about. But Prometheus, to me, looks like maybe one of these summer blockbusters that can deliver both that summer nonsense and also some art. And The Dark Knight Rises is another example of that, where it's like, hey, this doesn't look like it's going to insult my intelligence for 2 hours in the middle of summer.
I'm hoping that that's the case. And again, when I saw the Avengers in 3D, I got to see a really lengthy 3D trailer for Brave.
Oh, okay. Nothing about Brave has me excited yet, except that it's Pixar, so I'll give it a shot. But there's nothing about Brave that has me particularly excited right now.
Yeah, it's interesting. I can't sort of tell if I'm going to see it. There's another film that I know I won't see ever. Ever. I'm going to put it on the shelf with all the films I've never been able to see. And I'm dying to know your opinion of this, because I think you've seen the trailer. I think this might have been on Trailers with Doug.
Okay.
And I remember the first time I saw a TV commercial, I was like, what? What? Ted.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I think it's going to make money. I think a lot of people really like Seth MacFarlane. I think people like the idea of swearing, which there is a lot of in the trailer. But my understanding is that it was a very expensive movie. And so...
Because of what they had to pay him, or because of the special effects?
Perhaps both. I honestly don't know. But it'll be interesting. I mean, that transition, I don't think, has worked a ton of times. I mean, Larry David made Sour Grapes.
Yeah. And clearly I'm biased. The whole Seth MacFarlane thing eludes me.
Sure.
I think we've talked about this before. I call it comedy without humor.
Right.
There's a reference, but there's no joke. The joke is the thing that's hard to write, not
right.
just a reference.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of what else I was looking forward to. Moonrise Kingdom, we have coming out in a few months. The new, at the end of this month, I think, the new Wes Anderson movie.
Yeah.
Which I'll see, because I like Wes Anderson, but I'm a little burned out on the Wes Anderson-ness of it all. And I see that trailer, and it's like, well, sure, that's all the stuff that you do, Wes Anderson.
And I was amazed at how sort of thick his auteurism was, that he was able to take the terrible, the friendly Mr.
Fantastic,
the
Mr.
Fantastic
Fox.
Mr. Fox,
yeah,
and turn it into a Wes Anderson movie.
Right.
I was like, that was quite a feat.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. So
stop motion animation,
yeah.
And it's the brother of, you know, all of his live action films. I was really impressed by that.
Yeah. So I will see it, but I'm skeptical, because I might be a little tired of his shtick at this point.
The other movie I got to see a lengthy 3D trailer for was Frankenweenie.
Yes. I saw that trailer as well.
And I want to compare this to a comedy routine we're both familiar with. Patton Oswalt, one of our favorite comedians, does a lengthy routine about when he stopped taking his medication for depression. And how his depression reacted to that. He compares it to a dog who thinks that the dog might be going out. So the Frankenweenie trailer starts, and I instantly know what it is. And I'm angry at Tim Burton. See my column about Tim Burton. And I'm very disappointed by, apparently, what they did to Dark Shadows. So I'm watching the Frankenweenie trailer, incredibly jaded. And suddenly...
Really? Really?
A French poodle bites Frankenweenie and is instantly given the Bride of Frank. I don't know how they're going to expand it to an hour and a half, Because the original is like 12 minutes or something.
It might be closer to a half hour, I think. I don't remember.
Is it going to be in 3D?
Well, I'm sure. It's animated, yeah. So.
The 3D in the trailer was really good. And I thought the animation was really good, too. Which
It looks like everything. I mean, it looks like Corpse Bride, you know? I mean, it's that same sort of Tim Burton style. It's black and white,
yeah.
Right? Which, that's cool for a kid's film.
Which is another reason to go see it and support black and white.
And it has these horror elements that, I mean, I'm sure I'll see it, but there's a part of me that's like, well, this completes the selling out of Tim Burton, right? Because he makes this movie very early in his career for Disney, and it ultimately is part of what gets him kind of shit-canned from Disney. And yet now here it is, years later, and lots of success later, and he's all too happy to come back under their protective umbrella and turn this into a feature-length kids movie for everyone to enjoy.
And I completely agree with you, and yet, at the end of the 3D Frankenweenie trailer, I think I whimpered under my breath, I can't quit you, Tim Burton.
Dark Shadows will do it, don't worry. Dark Shadows will put you off of Tim Burton. There's one more movie this summer that is not... I mean, there's other movies that I'm excited about this summer. I'll go see The Expendables 2. I don't expect good things.
Which I wanted to ask you about because you're the action guy.
Yeah.
You're the action Jackson man.
It looks terrible. The one thing that gets me excited is like, oh, Jean-Claude Van Damme is going to play a villain, and that has me excited because he hasn't been in a real movie in a long time. And I kind of like the bit with Schwarzenegger and Bruce Willis in the tiny car.
Yeah.
But Schwarzenegger saying, I'm back, gives me douche chills. So I'll see it. There's one movie that is off the radar, sort of. It's not an art movie. It's not a blockbuster. And again, that's the way the summer operates. You basically get one movie a week, and then maybe one little counter-programming thing hits a few screens. But then every once in a while, a studio puts out a movie, and you have no idea what their hopes are for it. There's a new Oliver Stone movie coming out called Savages.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not the world's biggest Oliver Stone fan. I think a new Oliver Stone movie is usually worth seeing, even though it's not always very good, especially lately. And I don't even necessarily think Savages looks particularly good, because it looks like Oliver Stone trying to imitate Tony Scott. And that is going backwards, world. No one should imitate Tony Scott. But that trailer is so crazy, and I can't get a handle on what that movie is. It has me interested. Like, I want to see it just to understand what the hell this movie actually is.
And recently, and I'm trying to remember if this was featured on Trailers with Doug. I think I saw it through a link on Slate. There's a film coming out, I think it's in the fall. It's called Argo.
Yes.
And it claims to be based on a true story. And I was a senior in high school during the Iranian hostage crisis. And if this really happened, it's really interesting because, of course, no one knew what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
And John Goodman plays John Chambers, who did all the makeup in Planet of the Apes and won an honorary Academy Award for makeup. And it turns out John Chambers got into makeup because at the end of World War II, he was working on prosthetics, better prosthetics for soldiers who were, maimed in the war.
Right, right, right.
And so he had that connection to the U.S. government. So John Chambers is a hero of mine because
right.
he was one of the greatest makeup artists of all time. But in this film, it's suggested that he was also an undercover spy for the U.S. government and got people out of Iran. Oh, my God!
Michael Parks is in the movie also playing Jack Kirby.
I will be there on the first day.
Yeah, that was one of the movies. Then I started looking ahead to the fall when you get the prestige movies. And there are a handful of movies that I'm really excited about, Argo being one of them. We theoretically will have the new Paul Thomas Anderson movie,
The Master
this year. Of course, at Christmas, Django Unchained.
Yes. That's the last film on the list.
Yeah.
On my list, except for The Great Gatsby.
Interesting.
A novel I teach every year.
Yeah.
It's never had a satisfactory film adaptation. And I somehow suspect that Baz Luhrmann is not the man to give us one.
It'll be in 3D. That'll help,
Are you
right?
serious?
I believe so, yes.
Because I don't understand his riches. Can I make a prediction?
Sure.
There's a scene with coins falling through the air.
Scrooge McDuck style.
And the camera tracks through the coins, and it's in 3D. And my, oh my, You know, I never really realized the symbolism of the green light at the end of the book until I saw the green light in 3D. And so Baz Luhrmann's version will end with, "And so we beat on, like boats against the current in 3D, borne back unceasingly into the past in 3D.
Yeah, but then he'll play like a Madonna song and it'll be great. There's a couple more movies that I'm looking forward to that I want to make mention of, one of which I know you are not looking forward to, and I only am in theory.
I know what film you're going to say.
It's The Hobbit. You were coming up with something else.
Completely wrong.
There's only one trailer out for The Hobbit right now. Doesn't look good to me, but I am a fan of the...
I'll go see The Hobbit.
Yeah. Well, I didn't. You're not a fantasy fan.
To score points with my wife.
And, of course, that movie is at the center of some controversy right now because of this whole 48 frames per second thing. You heard about this.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's twice as good, right? So I'm interested in that, although I fear that Peter Jackson is slowly being locked in a Star Wars cage. A movie called Killing Them Softly, which is a horrible title for a movie, formerly called Kogan's Trade, which is worth bringing up only because it's the new movie by Andrew Dominik, who made The Assassination of Jesse James, which we talked about a few weeks ago on the Westerns podcast. And he's a pretty great director, so I'm interested to see what he does next. Seven Psychopaths, the new movie from Martin McDonagh, I think is his name, who did In Bruges, which is a great movie.
And Seven Psychopaths is a great title.
Yeah, right. Much better than Killing Them Softly.
That's a film that announces that it's up my alley. When you said that I probably wasn't going to see The Hobbit, which I will, I thought you were referring to This Is 40.
Oh, yeah.
Another chance.
I didn't even bother putting it on the list.
Another chance for Judd Apatow to do the part of Judd Apatow I like the least.
Yeah, he's becoming more and more self-indulgent. Have you seen the trailer?
Yeah.
There's not one laugh in the trailer, I didn't think.
Well, you know, Patrick, laughter isn't everything. I think funny people taught us that.
The other movie I'm looking forward to this year is Looper, the new movie from Rian Johnson, who made The Brothers Bloom and Brick, two movies that I really like. Have you seen trailers
for
Looper?
I've seen the trailer for Looper.
It's Joseph Gordon-Levitt going in time as a hitman.
Yeah.
And it looks really neat. There's a lot of images that you're like, oh, I wonder what that is. It'll be neat to see him work sort of with a big studio budget, although they do this weird thing to Joseph Gordon-Levitt's face, perhaps to make him look more like Bruce Willis. They put all this makeup on him.
Yeah.
It's distracting. We're watching a movie where he travels through time. I'm willing to buy that he grows up to be Bruce Willis without them having to convince me through makeup.
I can see that. Not the greatest slate, but not the worst.
No.
I'm so happy that they're not going to release A Beautiful Mind in 3D. Because think about those scenes in his little shed.
Oh, yeah, right.
Where the papers are blown around. My son said the greatest thing about A Beautiful Mind. When we finally get to go in the shed and we see that it's plastered with all these papers with all these equations and things on it, we're like, oh, I see, he's loony. But then my son pointed out, given his line of work, wouldn't we sort of expect his workspace to look like that? That's not abnormal at all, Ron Howard.
I don't know. Listen, they can't all be winners, Ron Howard.
Let's play the game.
Yeah. Let's do best worst.
Okay, I have hard ones.
Okay,
you. Shit. You ready for the hard one?
Sure.
Now, remind me again, because it's been a while.
Okay, you just name a filmmaker.
And you, sir,
yes,
have to tell me the best film and the worst film.
Yeah, my favorite and least favorite.
Okay, so, I'm sorry. I see, when I say that, it is the best and the worst.
Oh, sure, because there's right
my
answers.
My opinion... Yeah. Is automatically the right answer.
Oh, yeah.
Stanley Kubrick.
Mm. Okay. Shit. Okay. Full disclosure, I still have not seen Barry Lyndon.
It wouldn't be anywhere on either.
Okay.
This it is not without its charms.
No. And this is perhaps going to be an unpopular answer because I feel like this was a movie made before Stanley Kubrick was really Stanley Kubrick. But I think my favorite Stanley Kubrick movie is still The Killing.
It's terrific.
And he made a ton of great movies, but at a certain point, at like post-2001, there are all these big sort of expansive, you know, and The Killing is much more modest and small. But I think that's still my favorite. And worst Stanley Kubrick. And it's not even a movie I dislike entirely.
I'm waiting.
Yeah, no, you know what it is.
Okay.
Eyes Wide Shut.
Yes, it stars the black hole. I agree with Eyes Wide Shut. I think for very personal reasons, my favorite Kubrick film is Lolita.
Interesting. I thought for sure you'd say Dr. Strangelove, what with it being one of your favorite movies of all time.
I think that might suffer from classic syndrome, where you've heard the song so many times on FM radio, you sort of discount it.
Sure.
But Lolita is incredible in a lot of different ways.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of directors that you guys haven't done in the past.
Yeah, the more we do this, the harder it will be. I'll go for you, John Carpenter.
Wow. Wow. That's only hard because he's made so many films that I didn't like.
Yeah.
I should actually be able to do a great John Carpenter impression because he is in every damn documentary about
500 cigarettes.
70s horror films.
Yeah.
He's the eminence grease. He's the grand old man. He weighs in on all of them. And this summer, he's finally coming to a horror convention around our place, so hopefully we'll get to see him live. I have to say his best film is Halloween. I'm just such a fan of so many things that that film does, so that's the obvious choice for best. But I have gone to see so many of his films, Chasing the Dragon,
right.
That was Halloween.
Right.
I'm having a hard time coming up with one that was just so incredibly awful. Escape from L.A.
Really?
Only because I have so much affection for Escape from New York.
Okay.
And I don't remember Ghost of Mars, although I've seen it.
It's much worse than Escape from L.A. To me, I don't know. But
I'm mentally running down the films that he made after his fall from grace.
Memoirs of an Invisible Man. Oh. Village of the Damned. He hasn't made one in a long time.
Yeah. You know, I'm confusing it that... Oh, no, didn't he come out with...
He just had one last
Mike
year.
Mike reviewed it.
The Ward.
And because of Mike's review, I didn't go.
And that is the correct answer for his worst movie.
Okay.
It is by far his worst movie. It's a movie so bad, you can't imagine how the guy that made it ever made a good movie.
Because time passes and one becomes old.
Yeah.
Francis Ford Coppola.
Francis Ford Coppola, gosh, I mean... I think there are three possible choices for his best movie. I'm going to go with The Godfather, even though I could make a case for two others.
Because I know how strong your opinion is of one of those two films.
Yes.
That every time you see it.
Yeah. For 10 minutes.
It makes you wonder, why aren't films made this? It's like I want to go to there. You just
right.
you lose the capacity to say it in a grammatical sentence.
But I feel like that movie doesn't have... There's stuff in that movie that doesn't work as well for me, whereas I think The Godfather works. All the way through, it's a masterpiece.
One can argue that The Godfather is a perfect movie.
Yeah. His worst movie? You know, I've never seen Jack.
Oh, well then, that completely explains it, because when I posed the question to you, I thought, hands down, there is no question.
I've never seen Jack.
Just head-scratchingly bad.
Yeah. And I haven't seen some of his recent... Youth Without Youth, and Restrepo, wasn't that him?
It was, he didn't do that, it was like Teatro or something.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Yes, I know the one you're, yeah. I haven't seen either of those, so his worst, for me, I'll go with The Cotton Club, even though there's things in that movie that I like.
I thought you were going to say Captain EO, which I've never seen.
It's been too long since I was probably in 7th grade when I saw Captain EO. What's best and worst for you for Coppola?
Apocalypse Now is the best. It's a much more ambitious film, I think, than The Godfather.
Sure.
And I don't think there are many things that don't work. When I originally saw it, I was way too critical of it. And I think it was one of those films that when it came out, I wouldn't say it floored people. When it was originally released, I don't think people had the capacity to understand. And I think this is true of a lot of great films.
Yeah.
They're not truly appreciated until time passes.
Sure.
this theory that I've had for a long time that I think applies to comedies, that if the comedy is great and a classic, it's never appreciated when it comes out. It takes time. Duck Soup is released. Mm-hmm. It makes so little money that it loses Marx Brothers their contract at Paramount. Office Space, no one goes.
Right.
And then suddenly, it's now considered this classic.
Yeah.
So I would say Apocalypse Now is best. Like you said, you watch the first 10 minutes of that film, and it's just incredible. And Jack is really bad.
All right, I'll pose one to you, only because I don't think this is an obvious person to pose to you. Kevin Smith.
Oh, boy. I have less patience for Kevin Smith than any other person I know. And I've seen him live. I saw him live at Comic-Con, where this is before he became the comic book guy, and you could just walk in and hear this delightful chatter. Yeah. And I paid way too much to see him at the Chicago Theater be the laziest personal appearance guy ever. So there's boatloads of Kevin Smith films that I don't like at all. I think Kevin Smith's best film is Chasing Amy.
Yeah.
I think in that film, he has something very interesting and unique to say about relationships, what we get out of them and what we give up to be in them. And I love that film so much. And I don't think I've seen it that many times. I thought Zach and Miri make a porno was so awful in so many ways and so off the mark, especially from the man who made Chasing Amy and might have been able to bring that in for a landing. But I'm one of the few people I know who has real big problems with Clerks.
Oh, okay.
Did like the musical number in the middle of Clerks 2, though.
Yeah.
But I think we've discussed this. Whenever there's a movie that's not a musical that right. does that, it's right. delightful, and right. we give it all sorts of credit. What would you say for Kevin Smith?
I think Chasing Amy I would agree with for his best, and his worst, I don't think I would pick Zack and Miri only because I still liked Seth Rogen in that movie.
Yeah.
For his worst, I mean, it's hard to pick from most of his recent output, but I probably have to go with Cop Out, which I'm guessing you did not see.
No.
No.
And because at least Zack and Miri is a Kevin Smith film.
Right.
From the evidence, Cop Out is anonymous work for hire.
And not particularly good anonymous work for hire. In fact, really bad anonymous work for hire. So I think that, for me, would be his worst movie. So that's it. Thank you guys for listening, and enjoy the rest of the year. We're going to take the next 7 months off.
Yay!